topic is spirituality and meditation for mental well-being. Well, you all know that we all claim to be spiritualistic. Spiritualistic in some or the other aspect. But trust me, ask yourself, are we really spiritualistic? What is true spirituality? What is meditation? My age group people in Delhi, when we talk to people, everybody says we meditate. Meditation is becoming a fashion. Kisi bhi youngster se aap baat karein, hum kya karte hain, what are your likes, dislikes, we meditate. So many kinds of meditations have actually come into being. But what is true meditation? You know, meditation is becoming part and parcel of everyone's life. You all are sitting here. If I ask you one simple question, aap kahan se aaye ho? What is your home? You'll say, I have come from Delhi. I live there. I live in XYZ place. If I ask you another question, 2 minutes ke liye aap apne room mein enter kariye jahan se aap aaye hain. Can you see your room? Yes or no? Everyone can see your room. One person in your home whom you like the most. Can you see that person? No matter that person is here or not here, you can see that person. If I ask you another question, just experience that loving moment which you might have ever lived with that person. I can see the faces changing, the smile coming on your faces. Now imagine that person is not there, that moment is not there, that home is not there. But who is seeing? The eyes, the mind. Right? Now this was 100% meditation of a body with another body. Imagine if we do the similar meditation, remaining in that seed stage, that I, the soul, meditate with Supreme Father, the immense energy which is going to start flowing in you. So I would not take long, and I would like to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Avdesh Sharma, who is a leading psychiatrist in Delhi. He did his MBBS from Maulana Azad Medical College and his MD from Bangalore Institute. He is a public figure and he has written a lot of books, and something very interesting which he recently wrote. He has been the editor of Spirituality and Mental Health. He's written Art of Psychiatry. He's been the key chairperson for a lot of international and national conferences. He's been the anchor of various TV programs and has been the director of Parivartan, the Center of Mental Health. He's been the trustee for another very interesting program, a charitable and medical research trust, which he's been running by the name Rahat. So I would not take long, since we are actually running short of time. I would like to call upon Dr. Avdesh Sharma to share his views on spirituality and meditation for mental well-being. Dr. Avdesh Sharma.
Thank you very much, Sister Monica. Good morning. I know that you've been awake since 3:30, so it can get a little tiring. But there's a saying that human mind, once stretched, can never reach back its original proportions. How many of you have attended conferences in which you needed to be awake and in a hall for 14 to 16 hours? This is one. And that's going to happen for the next 3 days. But I can assure you that even after you go back, you would still not be able to get rid of the high for some time. There's a movie that came recently, Pyar Ke Side Effect. And I used to wonder that something as positive as Pyar, uske kya side effect hote hain. So actually conferences like this also have some side effects. And they are mostly in the form of withdrawals. You know, I came here 18 years back And I had a flipping experience. I flipped mentally. I flipped spiritually. And that is the experience which I keep looking for. And that is what keeps bringing you back again and again and again. I have spoken to a lot of my colleagues in this place, including people like Dr. Pratap Midha, who if offered a job elsewhere would probably be getting about 5 lakhs a month. And I've asked him, Bhai Sahib, you don't feel like going out. And he says, I can't imagine my life without this place. And that's a fact. These are experiences of well-being which all of us look for. How many of us here came into the medical profession for money? How many of us here came into medical profession for money? Then you are in the wrong profession. Because you are much more intelligent that if you wanted to make money, if you had gone into business, you would be making much more money. Most of us actually came into medical profession for altruism, for being able to do something for the fellow human beings. Money is a necessity, but it should not become a means to an end. Unfortunately, that's where we stand today in this society at this point of time. My next about half an hour of presentation actually is going to be talking about only the basics of scientific medicine. You would hear a lot about spirituality from very senior sisters and dadis like you heard yesterday. I'm only going to restrict myself to what is applicable at this point of time at a scientific level. Does anybody remember the definition of health, WHO definition? Yes, Dr. Helge. Okay, near right, not complete right. Okay. It is a complete sense, that's the word, complete sense of physical, mental and social well-being. Spiritual is not there in the original WHO definition and not merely the absence of disease. Now, why I talked about this is that although it is there enshrined in the definition of health by WHO, it's been 60 years and incidentally spiritual word was brought in the very first session that they had for the definition of health, the group, and actually it was India which had introduced the concept, but it was rejected mainly by the Chinese and the Russian bloc because they are non-religious as a state and they didn't want to bring in anything which did look religious. Then Dr. Bisht, who was the Director General of Health Services, he again tried to bring it in. And in 1998, WHO once again said that possibly those countries who are religious, spiritual, can bring it into their programs. But officially, the WHO definition of health at this point of time does not have the word spiritual. I'm going to go and talk about what we were taught. Medicine consisted of primary, secondary and tertiary prevention, which is the preventive aspect, the treatment and management and rehabilitation. So, which takes us to two dimensions. On one side, you have the wellness dimension and on the other side, you have the illness dimension. You have the well-being dimension and the dis-ease, which comes from the word when you are not feeling at ease, then you become diseased. Now, dis-ease actually is the starting point of becoming diseased. Many people may be diseased, but yet not having a disease. If you do not pay attention to dis-ease, you ultimately become diseased. Now, well-being dimension, incidentally, has never been taken up by organizations at any level. WHO, incidentally, and I'm fortunate that I'm a part of a group of WHO, which is talking at this point of time about the well-being dimension. The CRO region, the South Asian region, has started a project on well-being, and they're trying to cull out what are the various factors which can be utilized in well-being. We have had 3 consultative committee meetings, and 2 main factors are coming up. One is spirituality, and the other is meditative oblique yogic lifestyle. And possibly in next 6 months, this region would maybe have a policy document which would be then referred to different governments, 11 countries in this particular region, and then maybe it will become a global document. Now, when we talk about health and disease, we go back to the textbooks. There used to be what is called as nature versus nurture and genetics environment interaction. Latest studies have said that actually there is no difference between the two. Genetics, or what we are born with, is only a roadmap. How we use that roadmap ultimately decides whether I become diseased or not. About 30 years back, I can see a lot of gray hairs in this auditorium. People who have done medicine, let's say, before 1970 or 75. The percentages of illnesses that were there in the community, whether it was hypertension or it was diabetes or it was cardiac diseases or it was depressions, I remember was never more than 2 to 3%. Now they have jumped 5-6 times. The genetics has not changed. What has changed is the expression of those genes. And the expression of those genes changes because of lifestyle factors. In the last about 5 years, there is another thing which we are seeing, and basically that has come from very advanced technology, that how we think and what we do changes our cells at the cellular level. And not only at the cellular level, but the cellular level in the DNA. So actually you can have a change in the DNA level of a person in one generation. Consider another fact. The human body keeps changing every year. Completely. So, I, the person who came into last mind-body conference, is not the same person. At everything, at the atomic level, the molecular level, and the cellular level, has changed completely. My cells in the intestines have changed every 5 days. My skin has changed every 30 days. My liver changes every 6 months. My bones change every year. But what continues is the memories, which the consciousness continues to express itself. And because if the memories are faulty, then I continue to produce the same diseased pattern. So if I have a disease, and actually very interestingly what Dr. Pratap Midha was saying, Dr. Satish Gupta's study and many studies giving similar results, is at one point of time the person stops to express the diseased pattern in the cells. And thus, because of that, you go back to your original position. Medicine incidentally meant making a person whole. It comes from the same word called Madhiri. Meditation also incidentally comes from the same word. Which means that you go back to your state of homeostasis. Which means that you get rid of all the things that are not expressing, allowing you to express yourself completely. And the tools and techniques that we have learnt over a period of time in our medicines reflected what was the knowledge at that point of time. Unfortunately, in last 50 years, we went more in the direction of technology and pharmaceuticals. And now we are realizing that they can only help us in changing the expression of the disease at that particular point of time, but doesn't do anything as far as the basic reason why we express the disease. And what we are talking here in this particular conference is how you can change the basic way by which disease is produced. And if you do that, then not only will you prevent diseases from happening, but you will allow a person to live a more holistic life and go into the dimension of well-being. Next one, please. Okay, these are the general principles. We know that the universe is extremely connected. Did you know that whatever you are breathing at this point of time and whatever I am breathing, we are breathing the same molecules? It is the same oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen which is there in this particular place. So if you have a few germs, if you have a few tuberculosis cells, I also receive the same. You express them differently, I express them differently. So the entire universe is interconnected. About 7 days back, there was this particular item in the Times of India that they were able to track the sand dunes of China all over the world, round and round. And in 13 days, the sands had shifted all over the world, round and back to China. So similarly, everything that we are at this point of time, I keep on expressing and it keeps going. And unfortunately or fortunately, the same happens with emotions. The same happens with thoughts. Thoughts and emotions, as you would realize in the next 3 days when you would be listening to the sisters, are also forms of energy. Human being actually is nothing but a form of energy. So if you have energy which I express, if it is negative, then it rubs off on you, and then from you it rubs off on another person, and it keeps going round and round. But if we were to halt it, then it starts the opposite cycle. And incidentally, there have been some mathematical calculations of how many percent that are required to change the world. And the answer is less than 1%. If 1% people change critically, that's a critical mass, like you have the nuclear fission, a certain number of atoms are required to gain a particular momentum and then a fission takes place and there is an atomic bomb. Similarly, you require only 1% of the population to change their mindset, and then through their interaction it starts another process by which you can change the people around or the society around. There is ample so-called scientific evidence that's available at this point of time. I'll go a little faster on this. Another thing which I want to just share. How many here believe that we have a soul? Okay, almost about 90%, 95%. How many don't believe that there is a soul? Okay, alright, one. How many believe that the soul is a part of the body? Now, that's a tricky question. And how many believe that the soul creates the body? Only two. Alright, one way of looking at it is that there is a body which has some kind of a mind, and then there is a soul. At some point of time they interact, how, we don't know. And actually, if you were to start going deeply into the process, the soul is the primary energy which creates the body. Because as Dr. Pratap Minda was saying, that in the continuum of soul, mind and body, the Chaitanya factor, the conscious factor, is the soul. The body does not have any consciousness per se. So the soul starts creating a body around it. My body is based on the qualities of my soul. And if my soul starts becoming lax, then my body starts fattening up. The minute I want to shift The minute I want to be different, my body changes. If I am peaceful, it shows on my body. Nothing needs to be done. So soul actually is the driving seat. And that's why all the techniques actually of mind-body medicine should be aimed at the soul. Body only when it starts becoming diseased. But before that, it has to be all soul medicine. Unfortunately, it is not taught in any medical college. Unfortunately, there are no CMEs for it. And I would say that we are all very, very fortunate for us to be sitting at least and talking about some of these things. I would only request that what you are hearing, if you can, start noting down, not as what has been said, but as how you can apply it in your day-to-day practice. Because this will look very nice, very fancy. Many of you will agree with it. It will make you think. But then you go back and go back to the same patterns, to the same practices. And what you can get the maximum out of this place is when you can for yourself start small, make a plan of action which you can do when you get back home. Because only then will it be something much more meaningful. Quickly, these are the sources of deceased. Next one, please. Faulty mind management. Yesterday, Dr. Ashok Mehta spoke about the psychosomatic aspects. That is the interaction of the psyche or the mind with the body, producing psychosomatic diseases. At this point of time, even if we were to look at the psychiatric diseases, the percentage is about 20 to 25% of the general population where there is a prevalence of psychiatric disorders. Most of them are at this point of time manifest, but unfortunately the rest of the population also have faulty patterns of thinking, negative thoughts, waste thoughts, leaking of energy, which ultimately is the hole through which all the energies of the soul and the mind start leaking, and not enough is available for the body to be able to fight various kinds of diseases. Just go back. Go back. There's a very interesting book by a person called Norman Dodge, who's written a book called The Brain That Changes Itself. It is a study of last about 5 years of how the human brain actually is not fixed as we used to think. It keeps changing at all points of time based on the information that we receive and based on what we do in life. So you can literally within 6 months start changing through fMRI, you can see those changes of what is happening in which part of the brain. And what is extremely, extremely heartening is the changes that sometimes can start happening on third day. So for example, if you start meditating, on third day itself, those areas of the brain which are found to be useful for positive emotions can start firing. Unfortunately, though, don't stay too long. And what is required is about 6 months for these neuroplastic changes to take place. So you can imagine that if you have been used to negative patterns of thinking, faulty patterns of thinking, there are literally maps and maps of it in your brain, which are patterns which have been created. And you know, agar ek jagah pe aap ek nala bana dein, to pani kahin se bhi aaye us nale se niklega. And it just keeps going through the same patterns again and again. What is needed is a shift of creating new patterns, so that the old patterns over a period of time start going into disuse and new ones are created. Next one, please. And faulty knowledge of who am I. So now there is a shift of I am not Avdesh Sharma. I am Avdesh Sharma, the body which is housing the soul of a particular person who has acquired certain traits, who have certain sanskaras I was born with and created some more, and have a pattern of thinking which makes the ultimate expression of who I am. So what is required for me to change in future is not to change this, it will automatically get changed. The minute I shift the inner consciousness within. And once you start getting the knowledge of that, then all the things which are associated, that is the powers of the soul, the powers of soul, eight powers of soul, which I think would be, today morning also we had some of it from in the morning class, and the karmic pattern and the so-called drama, which I think day after probably you would be hearing. Next one, please. So what are the tools and techniques that are available? Dr. Midha spoke about large number of them, which are extremely, extremely applicable on a day-to-day basis. Relaxation procedures, biofeedback, and in our human interactions, whatever at this point of time in the field of psychoneuroimmunology we have, that is possible. I'm also going to talk about giving you a list of all others which are at this point of time available, for which there is at this point of time fair amount of scientific evidence, and which I think in the next years, 10 to 15 years maybe, will become the tools that would be available. You see, medicine moves in a certain way if you go back. You have a theory, and then based on that theory you have experimentation, and then you have a technology which comes in to deliver that. I remember at my times there used to be X-rays only, and then ultrasound was just coming up, and then came ultrasounds, and then of course later on CTs and MRIs and fMRIs and spec scans. Similarly, I think these are technologies which are just emerging. If we can very, very systematically harness these technologies, see the evidence that's available, which is now very quickly coming in, and then see how these can be applicable. And I personally feel it will not be more than 10 to 15 years before they will start becoming applicable on a day-to-day basis. You are the pioneers who would be able to put that technology into practice. So to the pioneers, I am giving the possible thoughts. Of course, appropriate physical medicine, psychological techniques that are available at this point of time, and a spiritual lifestyle. These are the old eight limbs of yoga, which were basically the right eating, the right exercise, the right thinking, and then right way of knowing who I am, the consciousness within. Next one, sister. These are the spiritually empowered ways for mental well-being. Now incidentally, I will only request any one of you who's a little skeptic to go on the net and try and see whether there is any scientific validation available for it. I did the same when I was working in this project. I went on the net and I googled spirituality and mental well-being, and I received 7.6 million hits which are available on this. A lot of them are of course advertisements, but a fair number of them are extremely good scientific material done in some of the best institutes. I don't have the time, but after this, if anybody is interested, I can give you references, starting from unconditional love, forgiveness, compassion, soul consciousness, egoless functioning, empathy, awareness of our karmic patterns, and then based on that the ability to give, selfless service, faith, happiness, contentment, hope, and purpose in life. These are the technologies of the future. These are the techniques which are already there. A large number of these techniques are practiced in many institutions. Spiritually augmented cognitive restructuring. Now this is a fancy name for saying that from spiritual perspective, how can you bring about a change in the pattern of your thinking, which in this particular place, Rajyoga, we do every day. Correcting distorted perceptual processes. Again, if I shift to who am I and what is my interaction with others, your whole way of looking at life, the process of perception shifts completely. Changing the conditioning of the mind. If somebody has not been, I'm giving you, cut and paste kind of replies. If somebody is not good to me and my condition is, mental condition is, oh, this guy is always against me. There is a story about it. There was this person who was driving on the road, very good driver, and there was another car ahead of him and he wanted to overtake and he was honking all the time. He couldn't, and then there came a stretch where he was able to overtake. When he was overtaking, he thought, I'm going to just give this guy hell. And he overtook and he saw his very old uncle who was driving the car. And immediately his perception shifted that my uncle, who's so old, is living alone, has to do errands and drive the car. Oh, poor uncle, how difficult it must be for him. And the minute that happened, his entire perception changed and he was no longer willing to call him names. It led to a lot of empathy. So the minute you are able to shift your way of looking at life, your conditioning changes. And the minute your conditioning changes, your whole way of looking at everything around you changes. So shifting the self, again a process which is done beautifully by the Brahma Kumaris. Techniques for improving hardiness, resilience, mental robustness, these are again concepts which last about 5 years we've been seeing. Suppressing stressful self-talk. Now there are certain psychological techniques by which we can help a client reduce, first understand and then reduce the negative talk that the person is doing to himself or herself. Belief in the higher self or higher being. Incidentally, about 80 to 90% people in this world, regardless of where they come from, regardless of whether they are from high or low socioeconomic status, believe in God, in some kind of a higher power. And if you do believe in that, then connecting with that will again shift your ability to look at life's hurdles. If you think that you have somebody who has more power than you, and if you have that person on your side, you suddenly feel much more empowered. So connection with God, that's why, becomes much more easy to handle problem. Mindfulness, that is not going into the back, not going into the future, but being aware of the here and now. Basically a Buddhist concept to begin with, but has now been taken into many of the therapeutic relationships. And lastly, but more importantly, altering your basic consciousness. The way you look at yourself, the way you look at others, and the way you look at life. Once that shift occurs, then a large number of problems can be turned into solutions. Now these are the tools which are again available at this point of time. Meditations, prayers, Dr. Pratap Minda spoke about some scientific evidence, values-based living. Dr. Mehta again yesterday spoke of the values in healthcare, energy healings again, which are supposed to be releasing and enhancing the energy patterns. We know that there is an aura around us which can be today photographed, and it's been found that in about 80% of the illnesses you can pick up about 6 months prior if a person is going to have a disease, including at some point of time maybe certain kinds of diseases. And if one can increase the energy patterns, then one can reduce the chances of disease. Yoga and satsang. Satsang basically means being with the truth or being with people who are following the truth. It is not about singing bhajans, which may be one form, but it's actually, and this is a satsang, actually speaking, which is going on at this point of time. As I said, there is a huge amount of traditional evidence. If people have followed certain practices for centuries, they would have done that because they have found it useful. If nothing is working, it gets dropped in one generation. You can't keep fads going on for years. So whatever is the traditional wisdom in the society, it's important to first harness that. And from that viewpoint, we have huge amount of scientific evidence available. You don't need to prove that mother's love is good for child. It's known. You wouldn't do double blind studies at this point of time, whether mother's love is good and how much is to be given and what critical period in life is to be given. We know traditionally that it is there. So a large number of these patterns of living and lifestyles have fallen into this, and I think we should go back to the old wisdom to quite an extent. Next one, please. Also, there is a huge amount of scientific evidence that's available, as I said. Next one, please. And the largest body of evidence, which is, next one, please, available is for meditation. There is a review of meditations in 2007 by the National Institute of Health, USA, which is a review of 11,000 studies that have been done on meditation. And I was surprised that the first number was USA, where they had done the studies, and the second was India. Out of this, they have taken 802 double-blind placebo-controlled trials on meditation and found what are the factors which are useful, whether they are useful, how they are useful, etc. And I have... Next one, please. Next one, please. And these are the various parameters on which they were studied: neuropsychological, neurophysiological, neurochemical, biological, neuroplastic. Not going into the detail, because I think there is another session, probably Dr. Mohit is speaking on some of this, that there are changes in the neurotransmitter level, there are changes at the neuropsychological level, and there are changes at the very structure of the brain, neuroplastic level, that gets changed with meditation, whatever type that you do. But what is important is that it should not only be a meditation for 15 minutes. It should be a meditative lifestyle continued over a period of time to get the maximum benefits. And of course, there have been clinical, healthcare, psychosocial outcomes and the growth measures of a person. Next one, please. So, a practice like Raja Yoga, which is more about lifestyle, more about what you eat, when you sleep, what you do with your emotions, what you do with others, how you live your life, and what is the goal and purpose of your life, and how you go about doing meditation. That would be a complete system which would give you all the benefits of meditation. Next one. This is something which was done by a person called Frederick Premji, who has tried to call out what are the benefits. And there are 100 benefits of meditation which have come about. Some have 4 or 5 studies behind them. Some have more than 100 studies behind them. And what's been found is that right from change in blood pressure, the ECG pattern to EEG pattern to heart rate to the functioning of the lung, all these physiological parameters to improvement in sleep, the ability to change your hormones, etc., etc., at a physiological level to a psychological level. Next one, please. Where we talk about interpersonal relationships, reduction. I will give you the 100 benefits, doctor. I'll do that if anybody is interested. So these are the changes which are being found in all areas. Next one, please. And the psychological and the spiritual measures. Now that brings us to the end of where we stand. I think we stand at a threshold. We have the choice today to follow the patterns that are going on in the society, which in the next 5 years, India will have highest number of diabetics, patients with heart diseases, and patients with depression. None of us in the best of institutions would be able to handle the sheer numbers that are there. We neither have the personnel, nor the technology, nor the money to be able to do that. What we require are the alternatives. Alternatives to first bringing about a change, being a role model, involving others at a mass scale, And then bringing about a change through technologies which does not look at very narrow bands of improving heart disease or improving diabetes, but something that improves the person as a whole, the complete bio, psycho, socio, spiritual aspects of a person. And I think that window is available to us today. But for that, the first thing that needs to happen is to bring about a change. And I think the process of change starts in this hall with me and you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for a patient hearing and such an exhilarating talk.
राजयोगी बन के सीखो फूलों जैसा मुस्कुराना, राजयोगी बन के सीखो फूलों जैसा मुस्कुराना, गुण प्रभु के गुन गुनाना, सब पे खुशियाँ तुम लुटाना, गुण प्रभु के गुन गुनाना, सब पे खुशियाँ तुम लुटाना, राजयोगी बन के सीखो फूलों जैसा मुस्कुराना।